there's a place for everyone, I think, and we might not be the right fit for a lot of people. And I totally get that. Any recommendation to somebody out there, if you're looking for something, find somebody who's already done what you want to do. They have the values. You can hear a lot of your beliefs in them. And then don't be afraid to invest in yourself.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Bill Allen, a Navy pilot and real estate professional, is the CEO and owner of Seven Figure Flipping and host of the Seven Figure Flipping podcast, where he leads the top house flipping and wholesaling mentoring groups in the world. Just a few years ago, he was stuck flipping one or two houses per year and doing all the work himself. But since then, he's built a systematized business that runs without him. His wholesaling and flipping company, Blackjack Real Estate, is based out of Nashville, Tennessee, and does business virtually across the Southeast. Bill has been investing as a limited partner in apartment syndication since 2018, and the past few years has focused on getting more involved as a general partner. Since then, he has grown his portfolio to 1,979 storage units and 247 apartment doors. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. I'm glad to be here. It's exciting.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show is, where did you start? Where are you now? And quickly, how did you get there?
Okay. So I started actually flying for the Navy. So that was my world. I didn't realize I was a closet entrepreneur at the time. I kind of, looking back, I can see that when I was growing up as a kid. Some of the things I did, like selling baseball cards and candy before school and stuff like that. So, you know, I was a hustler and went in the Navy and just kind of got my paycheck. But about the time I got married, I realized I had another mouth to feed. And then quickly after that, we had our first son. And now I had two more mouths to feed. And I was kind of looking at my future. I was always big on investing money. So I was always investing in the stock market and everything like that. And actually, that brought me to real estate. I was in a forum just learning about more stock investing, index fund investing primarily. And so I kind of understand how the investors work. Like, I was that person. But people were talking about real estate. And I had a house. I moved around so much, I started renting it out. I made some pretty good returns. I was making $300 or $400 after all the expenses and stuff every month. And I said, maybe I should do this again. I bought another one and then I moved again. So now I had two houses. And that's when I really started seeing kind of more, I wouldn't say exponential returns, but more than just $300 a month. Right. And I was like, wow, there's something here. So I started learning more about that. Then for me, I would say I knew that if something was pulling me to real estate. And it was primarily flipping and landlord, like rental properties. That's kind of all I knew. There wasn't a lot of commercial investing. There wasn't like large scale flipping that people do in hundreds of houses a year. And I saw it as kind of a side hustle. So I did that for a while, kind of just trudged along. And then I found a mentor. I actually paid a bunch of money to join a mastermind group. And that's when my business really took off. I went from kind of flipping one house a year to doing, I did 67 the first year, wholesaling and flipping. Then we did 135. Then we did like 187 the year after that. And then over 200 the year after that. So really just kind of grew in scale pretty fast. And I think a lot of that comes from the belief when you see somebody else do it, you just realize that you can. So that's kind of the story. And then I got kind of pulled into the commercial side and just, I got tired of those rental houses. I had 10, that was my goal, hit that. And then I just realized I was still managing them myself and stuff like that. It just wasn't overly scalable. So I wanted something that was a little more scalable. Some people pulled me into some deals. I really like to watch what other people do and just do it myself or do it a little bit better and make a Frankenstein model. So that's kind of it. Story, like very quickly, Navy pilot to like small time landlord. Then I started flipping houses and then I started really scaling that up. And then I got out of the military, still in the reserves and just kind of, I'm kind of a deal junkie. So I like to get involved in lots of different stuff. So
there's nothing wrong with any of that. That's fantastic. I think one of the things, you know, that we hear on this show is that, and myself is included in this, is that it's difficult to scale the single family side because there's always a lot of moving pieces. Every project is different. There's contractors, maybe you're different, especially if you're in different cities. It just becomes a lot to manage. How did you go from that one or two to where you could then, and I know you said joining a mastermind was helpful and seeing that other people can do it, but how did you do that and grow that in a way that was just not buying yourself another job?
Well, I think my fear in the beginning, and it's a lot of people's fear, is like hiring somebody else. So I didn't want to do that at first. I was really resistant to do it. The mentor of mine was just saying, hey, so my goal at that time, to kind of bring it back home for some of the people who are listening, maybe just getting started, was to do 12 flips in a year. So I was still flying full-time for the military. I wanted to flip 12 houses. And I figured I was making somewhere around $30,000 a year. That's like, or per house, that's like $360,000. I only made like $100,000 for the Navy, right? So I was trying to figure out how to do that. And he just looked at me and said, so you fly full time, you have a brand new baby, you have a wife at home that you probably like and want to spend time with. So how do you see yourself doing that when you're having trouble? And I was having trouble flipping one house over 6 months. It would take me 6 months to flip one right at the time. And I was like, well, I don't know. He's like, you need help. And so I left that call basically saying, I don't want to hire somebody. I don't want to be responsible to put food on their table for their kids, their family, all that stuff. It's just, I've never done that. I was a military pilot. My check shows up every 2 weeks. I don't have to be, I'm responsible for the leadership and lives of all the other sailors that are around me, right? But I don't have to write their check. And the money was the biggest fear in me. And so I realized after a week of kind of thinking about it, talked to my dad, talked to some other people, I just said, all right, I just got to do this. He's right. And so that was my first step. I hired that first person. And what it allowed me to do is I was flying 10, 12 hours a day. And I was putting out mailers and things that my phone was ringing, but I couldn't answer it. So I sent him to voicemail and there. And then I wouldn't even be able to get back to him because by the time I got home, I was, you know, messing with my kids, my family. I was putting my son to bed. I was making dinner, doing all that stuff. And then I was back in my office at, 8 o'clock. Right. And that's when I would work. I'd work from like 8 to 11 in my office. And I'd work from like 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. I can't call anybody back between 8 o'clock and 11 and 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. It's just not, it's not really appropriate. Right. And I also don't like talking on the phone. So I hired somebody to help me with that. And when I did, and I made that leap, I realized, wow, like this person is working when I'm doing something else. So the business is moving forward. Things are happening. I would come home from work and she'd have appointments scheduled for me. And it's the same thing. So I would just very slowly kind of organically hire the next person, the next person, the next person. And what I realize is I think a business, like scaling a business in anything, single family, multifamily, whatever it is, it really is about kind of your system, process, and ultimately the people. The people make any business. And a lot of people that are solopreneurs or building a business, they just want to do it all themselves. And if you like doing certain things, that's one thing. But if you're doing it because you think you have to, it's not necessarily the case. So I think in what I realized was I'm really good at building and leading and managing a team. And a lot of the day-to-day stuff that they're doing, I had to accept the fact that they're actually better at it than me. And sometimes that's hard for us to accept too. So for me, the how of scaling was really about the people, like understanding that you have to be able to bring in the right people and lead them and kind of motivate them and encourage them to be more, do more of those kind of things. So that's where I live now. I don't really make offers. I don't talk on the phone. I don't do any of those things. And you said like making another job for yourself. I kind of did, but it was more of a management and leadership job than it was actually, swinging the hammer or doing the work and those kind of things. So I think that's something a lot of people have trouble doing or accepting.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Have you had a situation where you've hired the wrong person?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. So I think there's two things that we look at inside the company. Now we operate off of a system called EOS. Gina Wickman wrote a book called Traction. A lot of people that are listening probably know it, but it's either the right people or the right seat. So you might have the wrong person in the right seat or the right person in the wrong seat. So first thing that we do primarily is hire off of core values. It took me a while to actually define them, to structure them, to build them in, to accept them and sit down. I've heard a lot of people talk about it. I said, oh yeah. I know my core values, the kind of people that are attracted to me in business and life. And we see very similar like values, characteristics, those kind of things in each other. Put them on paper and then started hiring based on that. Before that, I just hired somebody that would take the job. So a lot of times I did have the wrong type of people. Integrity is really big with me, especially with a military background. So we do what we say we're going to do all the time, even when nobody's looking. And what I realized is I had some people in the company that would say one thing, do another, kind of were more money motivated than they were kind of servant motivated, things like that. Stewardship is another one of ours, being a good steward of the resources, whether it's financial or time or our clients or anybody like that. So taking care of the people. And so we had the wrong people in the company over some different periods of time. And so we had to let some of those folks go. And sometimes they like self-select themselves out. They're just like, this is really not for me. And then we also I've had some people that were the right people, like they had all the core values, they were the right fit, but they were doing the wrong position. And usually I find that now using some personality profile testing that we do inside the company to figure out what they're best at and what they like to do. But I've moved some people around. Like I've had to bounce some folks around. I had a woman who was a lead intake manager for me. And then we moved her over to like some social media. And then I actually paid for her to go get a real estate license because I thought she'd be an amazing realtor. And so then she started selling our houses for us. So we just kind of found the right fit for different people. If they're the right people, they can stay in the organization if you have a spot for them. So that's a couple of things that happened with us.
Right, right. And I think that's interesting. And I think that's probably one of the things that a lot of people struggle with out of the gate is bringing people, team members on in that fear of, because I've done it one too many times, you know, where you bring people in and you invest a ton of time into them and you're like, ah, crap, like wrong person, wrong company. We got to part ways. And then you start over and there's just that disheartened, like, you know, oh,
totally.
And I don't want to do this again. Not again. I'll just do it myself. And then I'll have to deal with this nonsense. But that obviously is like, as you're saying, that's, then you become the bottleneck, right?
Yeah. That's the biggest mistake that you can make, really. I mean, I think you've got to learn from that. What did you learn? What did you do? What kind of person did you hire? Why? And really kind of build out, like, the hiring system is probably the most robust and important system that we have in the company right now is, and we just had somebody in my, the mastermind company where we just kind of launched a new program and we hired somebody for a member relations. So the people that talk to all the members that work with all of them that make sure, and she just wasn't the right fit. And we had to very quickly, after just a couple months, and as much as it pained us, as a brand new program, had people that just joined, and like we plugged her in. She's the go-to person, right? And said, "Hey, this just isn't working out." And she knew it. Usually, when you talk to those people, they're like, "I'm surprised it took you this long to have this conversation with me." Like they know it's not going well. So do you. So you just got to rip the Band-Aid off sometimes. And honestly, you're doing that person a disservice. If they're working with you and they're the wrong person or they're in the wrong seat, you're doing them a disservice by continuing to allow them to work with you. Because, and in fact, the woman that I was talking about that we made a realtor, she eventually, we parted ways and she called me like a year later. Because at the end of that relationship, I just said, "Look, it's not working here. You're going to find the right thing for you. This is actually, you might think that this is right for you right now, but it's not. It's very clear that there's something else out there that's better." She called me a year later and was like, "Thank you so much. Like I found the perfect position for me. I absolutely love my job. You were right. There were things I hated about it. I didn't want to lose my job." And that's where most people land. So it's our duty to those folks to let them go when we know it's not right, because they deserve better to be out there. The company deserves better, frankly. You need to be a good steward of your company, but they also deserve better to find the thing that they are like destined to sit in, the place that they should be in this world in their life. So if that helps anybody, that's like, there's probably somebody listening right now is like, "I got to let this person go." It's like, just do it. And honestly, a lot of times we feel like when we let them go, it's going to be more work on us. Right. But I'll tell you, all the stress and all the things that you're thinking about right now that are driving you crazy with that person being on board, when you let them go, it's all gone. Right. Like the weight on your shoulders is gone. And yeah, you might have to work a little bit more for a while, but you might be working even more than you think right now by compensating for that person's, some of the issues that are going on inside the company right now.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. You've said that as crystal clear as anyone could. So I think that's brilliant advice. And clearly you've been through it. So you know how that works. It is tough. It is tough though. I will say that letting people go is fun, but it is something where you go, like you said, it's the best for everybody. So, and we all have limited time, right? So why waste their time? Why waste yours? Like, this is just not working. But going back to team, you know, on the success side, you've been able to bring people on that have taken you places you could have never gone by yourself.
Totally. 100%. Like all the stuff that you just read in the beginning of the bio, it's like none of that. I look back and I said, all these people were placed in my life at a certain time for a certain reason. And in fact, even all the people that were the wrong people or the wrong seats or any of those things, they led me down the path that I needed to go to get where I am now. So the people are our biggest assets, 100%. Whether they're virtual assistants or they're in person or they're virtual here in the US or whoever they are to you, you really got to take care of those people, because there's no self-made millionaire. There's no self-made business person. You really are kind of accumulation of all your experiences and all the people that have come into your life and helped you through it. So I think if you really understand that and realize that, then you'll get a lot further and take care of those people. Because for me, like, there's a lot of things that we do that there's no possible way that I could do it. I fully accepted the fact that I am not good at a lot of things, as much as it pains me to think that, but we can't do it on our own. So the people, building a team around you is really, really important, and making them want to be better and do more. So personal and professional development is another one of our core values. And what we do is I'll invest in my team and their development. And they see that, like, I want them to get new certifications and new trainings and maybe go to some different events. We have different mastermind groups for our staff. Like we run a bunch of events. So we just got an event mastermind for my event coordinator. We have a membership team. So we have actually a membership mastermind for them. And they see that, like, we spend money as a company on them and their development. And that's big. Like, people see that. I want to build a place. I always tell everybody as a team, I want to build this company where maybe we're all in a conference room, this kind of concept, sitting around a table. And there's a bunch of people on the outside of these glass doors, like, trying to bang. They want to get in. They want to work for the company, but they can't because we're full and nobody wants to leave. So that's kind of the concept that I think about when I bring somebody in. And I really want to build a kind of a company in an area that people just, they don't want to quit for sure. And there's other people that want their job, but they can't because we're full. So that's kind of the concept that we build off of.
Right. I love that. I love that. That's a great picture and a good goal, you know, to aim towards for everybody that's in your organization. You said early on, and I want to circle back on this, was that one of the things that was kind of a key pivot point for you was joining a mastermind. What was that process like when you were vetting that out? How did you finally select one? And you said it was a big investment even. So how did you finally say, okay, this is where I'm going?
Yeah. So I think I'm an interesting story. So I'm very cheap. I don't like to spend money and I like to invest my money. And I didn't think of it like that in the past. I was actually all over the free forums. I was, I actually had a library card at the time. I wouldn't even buy a book. This is how cheap I am. So everything's free to me. And in those free forums, a lot of times there's a lot of negativity towards coaching and training and spending money on those kind of things. And so that was in the back of my mind the whole time, right? So I just want to, I say all that because I want to put you in the position of me now going to spend $25,000. So I went from a year, by the way, a year. So I went from just very cheap, but I did think about money differently than most people. So I also had some belief in myself. So going to the free forums, asking questions, library card, just getting books for free, reading them, turning them back in, and then going to RIA meetings and meetups and stuff like that, all free. I never had been to an event. I never bought a program or anything like that. I was listening to a podcast, probably much like this, just like you guys are listening here. And I heard someone, I was just bouncing around from all these like flipping and wholesaling podcasts, just trying to figure out what that was. And I found this guy that I just resonated with. There was just something about him. He seemed to be interesting, telling, like, honest upfront. There was obviously a core value match there, as we mentioned it before. And he interviewed his assistant. He hired an assistant, hired somebody, brought her in, and then was interviewing her on the podcast on this like 2-part series. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. The guy's like flipping 100 houses a year, doesn't go see the properties, can't work on them. And I'm sitting here like I'm working on one house at a time. I was finishing 1,000-square-foot basement myself. So it was completely raw. I had just bought it on a short sale and I was a test pilot in Pax River, Maryland. And I was going to this property. My wife was pregnant and I was finishing the basement at the time.
You're doing all the framing. You're doing everything.
Yeah. Doing the framing. I did everything with a drywall and my uncle came in to help me with the framing because I'm not a big framer. And my dad came down to help me with the electrical. So we did all the electrical wiring and everything ourselves, a sub panel down there. We wired the whole house, everything like that. I was trying to get it done really cheap. I was trying to, you know, not spend a lot of money and just pour my time in there. And so I'm just sitting here going, man, this guy's seems to have the ticket. And then right then he like launches this mastermind, this brand new mastermind that was $25,000 a year. And there was a contest to see who could get to $1 million a year in their business first. They would win a prize. And I am hyper competitive and interested in something like that. So I had just finished this flip house and we were selling it. It was under contract. $43,000 was our profit. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I'd like to do this again and again and again. I'd like to figure out how to do more of this because that's half my salary for the year.
Right.
And if I took $25,000 towards that, off of that, and invested in this program, then I mean, maybe I could do that. So I called my dad. My dad was an engineering. He started an engineering business in the basement. He's an entrepreneur. Took him 10 years to kind of build up a $1 million company. And I watched, he was never around when I was a kid. And I said, I am going to be around for my kids when they can remember. When my son turns 5, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be the coach. I'm going to be there all the time. And when I got older, my dad had built his business and he was around a lot. So I called him up and I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. It's crazy. It's like the cost of a Volkswagen. Like, what am I doing? And he said, well, son, it sounds like they're consultants. We hire those all the time in our business. We pay them a lot of money and they make us a bigger return. Like maybe it's more efficient, different things. Do you think that they could help you do another house like you're doing right now? Do you think next year you could do two instead of one if you were there? And I said, well, if they can't do that, then that's a big problem. Like, absolutely.
Right.
And he's like, all right, well, then what are you waiting for? Like, what are you doing? And so that reasoning just allowed me to make that investment. And I put it on my Amex card, not even knowing that I was so naive at the time that I didn't know that the house might fall out of escrow and not close. And I wouldn't be able to pay that bill 30 days later, because 2 weeks later, I was supposed to get $43,000. I was going to pay off the credit card. I didn't even have the money. So it was an interesting time. And that decision is like a pivotal moment in my life of just jumping and saying, okay, I'm in. I remember flying out to California, I didn't even know if I was going to show up at this hotel and anybody would actually be there. I didn't know anybody. I had done one onboarding call. And in that onboarding call, that my mentor kind of connected me with somebody else who actually, he ended up funding like the first six of my deals. And we did a 50-50 JV because he had money and I had deals. So even before I walked in that meeting, I knew one guy and we had done probably two or three deals together by then, which I had already made my money back before I even showed up to that first meeting like 2 months later.
That's really cool. That's really, and it was 25 grand a year. It wasn't a $25,000.
Well, yeah. When I paid the first 25,000, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, most of the mastermind groups, like it was, to everybody else, it was a no brainer. But to me, I was like, I think I'm in this for life, right? I mean, I had never bought anything before. You asked how I found that person. I'll say it's a funny story because I bought that mastermind group 2 years ago. So I actually own the first one that I ever joined now. So the guy who I joined, I bought his company in July 2019. And they asked me now, like I talk to people about the group and things like that. And I basically just say to them, like, you'll know, you'll hear somebody, you'll resonate with them just like I did. You'll know when it's right because the values will align. There's people that might listen to me or come to our events that are just like, this isn't for me. And there's people that will come and be like, this is my tribe. These are my people. This is where I want to be. And so there's a place for everyone, I think. And we might not be the right fit for a lot of people. And I totally get that. So I think any recommendation to somebody out there, if you're looking for something, find somebody who's already done what you want to do. They have the values. You can hear a lot of your beliefs in them. And then don't be afraid to invest in yourself. Like, believe in yourself. That belief is really what got me to where I am now, I think.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This has been fantastic. You know, one of the things that you, and obviously you've figured out how to scale multiple companies across multiple, you know, asset classes, both in single family, in self-storage, in multifamily. I mean, does it get easier for you the more you have developed these systems? I mean, I would think that becomes just a lot easier to onboard these companies the more you've figured out how to repeat the process.
I think some of it does. I think depending on the kind of business that you get into, there are different levels of issues and problems. I look at myself as a problem solver. I think as a business owner, that's ultimately what you do. And if you can figure out how to hire, like cast a vision and really like, it's almost like when somebody comes into a company, you have to sell them on where you're going, like the dream, right? You have this dream and you have to be able to convey that. And I think visionaries can do that really well by growing businesses, but I don't necessarily think it gets extremely a lot easier the more you do it. I think when you build out the systems and processes, it can happen, but it definitely takes time and work. Like if somebody tells you that it's easy to do, I don't agree with it. It definitely takes time. And a lot of times, us as entrepreneurs and visionaries and the folks that we are, we want to do stuff really, really fast. We have no patience. So sometimes like the faster you go, the faster you break things and the more things blow up and the more problems you have. So I have to slow myself down sometimes. Like we just bought a farm. We started scaling this farm behind our house. We have 13 acres, a bunch of horses and chickens and crops. And so I just added a farmer's market to it. And I'm finding it's like another business, but it's fun. And we are able to scale, but then somebody quits or somebody leaves and it's the same problem again. So it's really just like, you can repeat the process, but, and I will say one thing, all the lessons that you learned in that other business are going to let you go faster in the next one because you're not going to make those same mistakes again if you're smart.
Right. Man, this has been great. This has been great. Yeah. I think in the summary, you know, that I've gotten out of this conversation is it comes down to systems and people.
I mean, totally.
That has been the key takeaway, I think, for me here in this conversation today is systems and people. So that's fantastic. Is there anything else before we jump into the final four, Bill, that you'd like to add for our listeners?
No, I think if you can figure out the people and process, I mean, that's what it was in the military. The military is just a naval aviation enterprise, we called it, just a big business. So I watched that and I'll say one thing, if anybody's listening, you have some skills that will help you in business and starting a business, growing a business, scaling a business. And you might not even realize it. For me, it was leadership and it was kind of understanding data and numbers and things like that. So think about what you're really, really good at and then figure out how to apply that to the thing that you really want to do, the thing that you're pulled to do. And that's what, I mean, it took me 2 years to look back and go, I had those all the time. I just didn't see them because they were used in a different area of flying helicopters and airplanes for the Navy. So,
right. Yeah, that's cool. That's fantastic. Final four questions are this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
So looking back, I would probably take a portion of it and I would go find somebody who already knows what I want to do and has done it. And I would take a piece of that and invest in some system, program, or information. And I would take the rest and figure out how I can just put it towards getting deals. So like a deal flow. So I wouldn't buy systems or process, like any of that stuff, like software and things like that. I would just go figure out how I can get leads and make offers. Like it's leads and offers, that's it. I talk to people, negotiate, but have somebody there with me or some sort of system and just focus on that one thing for a while to make that 20, 100, and then I can figure out my next step.
Right. Love it. Love it. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Make one mistake in real estate and how would I avoid it? That's tough because I'm going to tell you why. People always ask me, if you go back in time, like, what would you do differently? And I was like, nothing. Like I lost $70,000 on a house and I remember it like it was yesterday and it was so important in my journey that I had to do it. Right. So I would say the only thing that I can think of here is that there are people out there that are giving you advice from their losses, their trouble. If they're in books, they're in podcasts, they're at events and things like that. You are going to be tempted to say, that's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to listen to them. I'm just going to keep going. That house I lost $70,000 on, a good friend of mine would not invest in the house because it had train tracks right next to it. And if I listened to him, I could have avoided one of the biggest losses I've had in real estate, period. And so don't second guess the people that have already walked the path before you. Like they're giving you the roadmap and they have the sports almanac, right? So take it and actually listen. And sometimes we're hard-headed and just have to go through it. So listen to the knocks that people have when they share them.
Right, man. That's great. That's great. Yeah. I love that. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
We just started and I don't know when this podcast is going to launch, but hopefully we've been working with charities for a long time. And we've gotten to the point where I'm kind of, I want to figure out where the money's going and how it's going there and what's being done with it. Right. And so we raise a lot of money in events. We support a lot of different organizations, but we want to bring that more in-house. So one thing that we're doing to make the world a better place right now is we're started our own 501c3 charity inside the company to figure out how we can point those funds to the places that we think are best. And we can actually participate in those activities as well, instead of just giving money.
Right. No, that's really cool. That's really cool. Look forward to seeing how that develops out for you guys. Last question for you, Bill. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Sevenfigureflipping.com is kind of where I hang out all the time. We have an event called Flip Hacking Live every October. But if you're a single family wholesaler flipper, want to raise money, I'd love to see you there.
Awesome. Bill, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.